I'd like to ask the speakers from the last two sessions to make their way up to the panel here. I recognize that we are running late, but we will take a few minutes to have a question and answer session, and then our lunchtime will be slightly shortened. I would encourage you, as they're making their way up here, to make yourself available, make use of the exhibit hall during lunch and during the breaks. We've cut into our breaks a little bit. There's valuable information in the exhibit hall from our exhibitors, a lot of products there, good opportunity to see those, and I really encourage you to spend some time over there. That also supports those exhibitors and partners who support ASDIN, so I encourage you to make time for that. Also want to make one other comment. We necessarily use devices and drugs that are proprietary in nature. We have to talk about them as a part of our discussions. We ask our speakers to talk about those. There's a financial disclosure, or there's a potential conflict of interest disclosure in the back of your little booklet, and I'd refer you to that so that you have that available as you're listening to sessions. And I wanted to point out one error in that disclosure statement. This morning, Dr. Ash spoke about Zurigen, and he had disclosed to ASDIN that he has a financial interest in Zurigen lock product, and we inadvertently did not put that under the disclosure section, and I want to apologize to Dr. Ash for that and just make you aware of that error on ASDIN's part. So with that, we'll open it up to questions from speakers.
Sal Isaac from San Diego. Question is that we really don't talk much about, and it happened because I work with a surgeon in the area that use a lot of the bovine grafts. And I know there is really no studies that compare it to the regular grafts, but my personal experience with it, I've seen less problem with stenosis or infection than a regular one, but unfortunately there's no study to back it up. So I'd like to know the opinion on bovine grafts from the speakers.
You know, Sal, we at our center, Dr. Child has placed some bovine grafts, and I have collected data on that and compared to our regular PTFE grafts, and although it's not a huge sample size, but I had not seen a major difference in terms of patency or cannulation.
Just point out that there's a talk on bovine grafts tomorrow, so stay tuned for that. Next question.
My question is for Dr. Asif. Since we brought up the arterial lesions, I'm a little bit confused what is the percentage of a significant lesion. Is it a gradient, a percentage angiographic? Is it flow? We know there is data from the peripheral vascular. Cardiologists mostly have that. And how did you apply this to blood vessels supplying our fistulas and grafts?
Yeah, Florin, that's a good question. Whatever I answer, he has to accept because I trained him. I want to say that most of the interventions, if you look in the cardiology literature, is the pressure gradient that is used. I'm not aware of flow determination that much. In our area, we used ultrasound dilution technique. So flow, because if the access flow was low, we were obligated to work on that stenotic lesion. Applying the same rule of 50%, thinking that I fixed all the other lesions, I know that this is the hemodynamically significant lesion. In our patients with hand ischemia, we use the symptomatic clinical features. If somebody had ischemia and there was a stenotic lesion 50% degree, and then I went after them.
I have a second part of the question. What stents do you advocate to use in the arteries?
I would say the two different scenarios. If you're dealing with a ruptured vessel, then I would say that it's wise to use a covered stent. In scenarios where you are dealing with a stenotic lesion, you have to pay careful attention to branches that are coming off the artery. It might be a branch that is very, very important and is a nutrient artery to, for example, the bone or a muscular branch. You have to use an uncovered stent. I know that most of us have available covered stents, so that would not be wise.
Thank you.
Dr. O'Neill.
Yeah, Alex, I enjoyed your talk about renal artery stenosis, but I'm really happy to see that you only intervene in about 10% of patients. And I happen to believe that once you have atherosclerosis and renal artery, the ball game's over no matter what you do. But perhaps there are some patients that might benefit. And that gets to the issue of selecting patients for this procedure. You mentioned kidney size as one of the criteria. And I just had some comments about that because of, and I'm assuming most cases, kidney size being measured by ultrasound, which is quite inaccurate at measuring kidney size. We routinely, when we do our renal ultrasounds, we make at least three, if not four or five measurements of kidney length in each kidney, because what we really want to know is the maximum kidney length of, and even then there's still a significant error involved. But ideally, I would hope that everyone would be doing their own renal ultrasounds. Probably, obviously, they're not. But if you do, send the patient to radiology for renal ultrasound, you should put in, specifically that you want to know as precisely as possible the renal length is. And then there's another problem in using renal length to evaluate patients as candidates for intervention, in that especially the patient you presented already had one kidney out. There are very few data, and there are no good data on what the kidney size should be in a single kidney once one of the other kidneys has been removed. Some data would suggest that if the kidney's normal size, it probably is not good. It probably should be bigger. But then again, it depends on what age the nephrectomy was done. So I think one has to be really, really very careful in using kidney size as an indication for intervention.
Thank you, sir, for those comments. I agree wholeheartedly. They're very important observations that you shared. Appreciate it.
Next question.
Hi. Ramesh Soundarajan from Chicago.
Okay, hold on just a minute, because our president just told me I have to have him go next.
Okay. Thank you, Tim. I just wanted to make a minor comment about ASTRAL, the randomized study that showed no difference. It is important to mention that in that study, the patients who the investigator thought would benefit from angioplasty were actually sent for angioplasty and excluded from the analysis. So I still believe and agree with Alex that there might
actually
still be
role. Let me follow up on that. I think Dr. Asif is absolutely right. But then, first of all, let me say commend Alex for a fantastic presentation. You know, ASTRAL, as Dr. Asif mentioned, has multiple limitations. Most of the audience is aware of it. But I really like to highlight that if you look at the number of patients who had stenosis, angiographically determined greater than 70%, less than 40%. So 60% of the patients in ASTRAL trial had stenosis, less than 70%. And I think the trial to look forward to is the German trial, RADAR, which the inclusion criteria is greater than 70%. As you know, CORAL is less than 60%. But I couldn't agree with Alex more that there is a subset of patients. Basically, I think the message I would like to say, which I'm sure everyone agrees, is that we shouldn't run away with these conclusions from these trials. Each of them have major limitations. And there are subset of patients that nephrologists can do plenty good in intervening, but as Alex said, there may be 5 to 10% of these patients, and we should not forget that these patients will benefit from them. And we're also doing a study looking at ischemic nephropathy patients, which are being missed and branded as end-stage renal disease, and the results will soon be out. Thank you, Alex. Thank you very much.
We're going to move to the last question then.
Yeah. Ramesh from Chicago. I have been limiting my plasties and interventions to the arterial anastomosis and the venous side of the circuit, but I'm hearing more about arterial interventions and stuff. I have deferred that at this point. But if that is something we are getting into, it'll be nice to have some more guidelines, some more limitations. And I know there were some slides from Dr. Arif about what you should do, what you shouldn't do, anticoagulation stuff. Maybe a topic of for future, but also maybe some thing. Do we need to have a backup surgeon when you're playing around with the artery? Should we be doing this in the outpatient? Because I don't know how many of us are really doing that right now, but something to look at.
Thank you for your comments and question. There's a two-part answer that I've got. One is that much of the information which you seek about appropriate anticoagulation strategies, cannulation strategies, et cetera, is outlined in a recent publication by Dr. Asif in Seminars in Dialysis. And I would encourage you to read that. In regards to the issue of surgical backup, of course, it is very important to be trained to do this advanced procedure appropriately. As it evolves, of course, accreditation for the specific intervention will also probably come to the fore under the auspices of the ASDIN certification committee in some way or another. And yes, of course, backup is absolutely critical. If you're in an environment where you don't have backup, you shouldn't be doing any interventions of any kind.
Oh, I'm not talking about the renal artery. I'm sorry. I was talking about the arterial circuit of the arm axis.
I'm talking about the same thing.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, we don't routinely make sure a surgeon's available when we go and do thrombectomies and stuff like that.
We don't have a surgeon standing by either, but they're just one phone call away, right?
True. Except with routine arterial intervention, should we be? I don't know what we need. What are the criteria? I saw a 10% to 17% complication rate for native arterial angioplasties, and I don't know if that is appropriate, acceptable, what, things like that.
I mean, Dr. Tremel Rodriguez's data, I think, is, and he's an exceptionally skilled interventionalist. I have to read the paper and see what he called a complication, but 17% of all arterial interventions having adverse events seems excessive to me.
Yeah, it sounds a lot.
Thank you very much for your attention.